welcome to episode 19 of VR Side Chats. Hope you're all well. So, another week, another interview. This time with Abby and Ashima Kumar of Warrior 9 Productions. In the interview, we chat about how they made their epic sci-fi series, The Phoenix, and also their work raising awareness for ocean pollution. So rather than listen to me, let's just get into it. Here's Abby and Ashima Kumar. Okay, well, thank you both for taking the time to come on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Not a problem.
You're welcome.
So yeah, just tell us a bit about yourselves and how you got into VR.
Okay, Ash, do you want to start?
Or... Sure. So I'm Ashima, the CEO of Warrior 9 VR, and originally we were a film company, actually. And we did film for a few years, so we were doing impact documentaries. And we always had this desire to do our own passion projects. So Abhi is a writer-director, and he had a script for a sci-fi series that was originally destined for TV. And we were looking at how we can get that made. And we actually came across somebody who... You know, we were considering the option of doing a web series, and we came across someone who's like, you know, I want to show you something in virtual reality. So this was in 2015, and we had never actually, you know, used the technology before in its modern form. And so this person showed us a little taster of what it's like. And then we thought, how amazing would it be to make our sci-fi show in VR? And that's how we first heard about it.
Yeah. And so basically we decided, okay, let's just put some money in and make like a 3-minute teaser in VR to see what, you know, and just show it to a few people, see what the response would be. So that, I mean, easier said than done. The 3 minutes took us about, I think about 6 months to put that together with the tech at that time. You know, with creating all the 3D models and all that kind of stuff. I had also never done animation before the Phoenix. So, yeah, I was just like, wow, this is a lot of work.
Yeah.
But totally paid off because we took it to, you know, Comic Cons around the region. We took it to tech events. We showed it to like about 1,000 people. And man, the reaction was people were just blown away. I mean, granted, you know, even today, VR is obviously not it at the mass level, but at that time people had just not seen anything like it, and it just totally blew their minds. So you know, we were able to create like a really strong narrative. I mean, Dan, you've seen it, and it's on our YouTube page and stuff, so it's something that was pretty impressive, and we decided, let's do this.
Amazing. So how did you go about funding it then? Was it self-funded, or did you get outside investment to do it?
Yeah, that's a good question. We have our film business, basically the money that we were making from that was going into R&D of this, basically. Mm-hmm. is how it worked. And then in 2018 we decided, you know what, we really need to dedicate full on to our VR side of things. So, you know, since then we basically use that money, and we've been lucky enough that, you know, we also have to do corporate work, obviously, to keep the lights on. So we've been lucky enough to do work with the big guys like Google and Facebook over the last year or so. So that definitely
helps. Is that VR work as well?
Yes, okay, cool. VR, immersive media work, yeah.
Amazing. So you was working on the Phoenix kind of like in your spare time when you wasn't, you know, doing the paid bills work?
So, I mean, at that time, we were still a film company. So our, you know, bread and butter was making films. And Abhi actually had a full-time job doing something else. So we would do the VR thing sort of on the side as a passion project. And, you know, when we first met this person who first showed us VR – And then they made 90 seconds of the Phoenix. It was so rudimentary what we watched. But the feeling of just seeing that 90 seconds was so mind-blowing. And, like, it's really hard to describe it to people who aren't in the industry, because I think all of us have had that mind-blowing moment, which is why we do what we do. But it sounds a bit like we've all drunk the Kool-Aid and people don't get what we mean, you know? And they just need to kind of have that transformative experience to see why it's worth pouring, you know, our whole kind of passion and energy and resources into doing it. It was that 90 seconds that convinced me that, you know, we have to do this because it's going to be amazing. And, you know, that was 3 years ago. And over time, the technology has just become so much more accessible, even on the creation side, that whatever we made then, it's so like miles and leagues ahead of what we first saw when we made that prototype.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, when we first started doing, and, you know, even since then, like, so many people have looked at it and been like, people from the business side have looked at it and be like, you know what, you guys are out of your minds. Why would you put so much money into something which you have no idea if it's going to succeed? It's an original IP. Our reaction was, it's because we believe. I mean, we're standing at the bottom of the mountain looking up, and it's one step at a time, right? So, you know, we have total faith in what it is, the story, the whole experience. And I think, I honestly believe that it's not that VR is going to take over and be the future of entertainment, but it is definitely going to be a significant part of it. It's just a matter of time.
Definitely, 100%. So you said that you already had the script for the Phoenix before, you know, you was shown some VR stuff. How did that script then change when you decided to make that in VR?
So it was. I wrote it as a proper feature, right? So it was like going to be like a TV movie or a feature film, and I wanted to do definitely more of it. But when we came to VR, obviously you can't do you can't watch it for that long before, you know. If we wanted to make it for mass, like the mass market, we wanted as many people to be able to just pick up, whether it's a cardboard or a HTC Vive or an Oculus, and just watch it. So I basically started by chopping it up into 10 episodes. Each episode is now around 10 minutes in length, approximately. I basically had to re-envision the piece in 360. So originally, you know, when I was writing it, I would be like, oh, this is great. We'll just cut at this point. We'll, you know, zoom in at this point. We'll do all sorts of kind of the traditional language. So when I would see it in my head, it would be in the traditional 2D format. And then I had to once I chopped it up and we were trying to do it, I had to first of all look at the dialogue and make sure that not more than one person was speaking at a time, so that the audience wouldn't be confused as to where to look. And after that, it was about the visual part of it, about how do I guide them, you know, so if I write, oh, a spaceship flies in, then you're automatically going to be following that. And then the spaceship then goes into this particular section and the story continues. So there's always something to guide the user, basically. I mean, ultimately, nobody can control that. You know, the way we create the environments, as you've seen, it's really detailed and beautiful. So I want people to watch it, look around. I want them to watch it multiple times. And, you know, they will... The narrative is always going to be there, but they will just experience it in different ways.
Yeah, because you had like a number of influences on there, like, you know, Blade Runner and stuff from what you were saying before. And that really shows.
Yeah, I mean, oh gosh. I mean, look, our team, you know, we have, there's six of us working on this. Again, it is a lot of work and I'm proud of my team. These guys are great. They bring their vision to it as well, which I fully accept. And, you know, a lot of the stuff you see out there is a true collaboration between all of us. It's not me sitting there going, it has to be like this, because nobody knows how it has to be. So that's why each of these people like fuel their ideas in. So you get a bit of Blade Runner, a bit of 2001 Space Odyssey, you know, a bit of like, oh gosh, even Star Trek and Star Wars, all of that stuff is just kind of in there. You just have to look for it.
Amazing. So you're prepping, like, how did you go about casting for it.
So, oh, go ahead.
Well, one of the main character in the show is Oz. And, you know, we knew that he had to have a commanding voice. We wanted to use talent in Singapore. And I had actually been to an amazing event, which was narrated by somebody who, his name is Ramesh Panikkar. He's well known in Singapore for voice narration and a lot of other artistic things. And, you know, it was one of those things where a few years later, we're sitting there going, well, who could play Oz? Who could play Oz? And I just remembered going to that event and saying, I know the person. And we didn't know him personally. So we kind of took a shot in the dark and just figured out who he was, sent him an email saying, you know, we're doing this project. And, you know, trying to explain again, it's virtual reality, this, that. It was all very, like, new to him. He's like, I don't quite understand it, but it sounds interesting. And we met, and he decided to come on board. And he was sort of the first person who really also believed in the project and opened doors to other actors who might be interested. And I have to say that, you know, all the actors we've worked with so far, they really do want to do it because they're excited about the material. And that gives us as well a lot of encouragement to kind of keep going. And we really do have some of the best talent that you can find in Singapore to do the voice acting. And we're really proud of that because it's not like we have a massive budget to make this. So it's said a lot about people just wanting to kind of join the ride.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if Ashima remembers this, but when Ramesh came in to do the recording, we had him for about 3 hours or 2 hours or something like that. It was a really short period of time, and we found this rinky-dink. It was a small studio. There was not much space. He kind of squeezed into the booth recording, and we had the video. We had like a 2D cut of it just running, and as he said the lines, and we kind of put the rough music track on it, and it just fit so perfectly. I remember looking over and Ashima had like a single tear just running down her cheek, and I was like, yeah, I think we got. And he looked at us, he's like, do you get it? And I was like, yep, we got it, Ramesh. I think we got it.
Yeah, that was for a trailer that we made, again,
that was the trailer,
concept trailer from 3 years ago, and it was the first thing that we were actually going to show the public. And you know, the thing is that, like, when you're on this journey, you're kind of, you know, it's just the two of you in the singular belief that this is gonna happen. And there are these moments along the way where you suddenly feel like, yes, it's coming together. And they're the moments that keep you going. And this was one of those times where we were just standing in this voice booth and hearing his amazing voice and the words on the page finally coming to life after so many years of having the script. It was like a really magical
moment. Did he record all of the lines for the entire series in that recording session or just for the trailer?
No. It was just, that was just for the trailer. Yeah. Because, you know, we didn't even know if we could even do a narrative, like tell the narrative story, would people care? You know, so it was only after that we were like, all right, we're going to really go ahead with this and make it happen. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the trailer we took around to different countries, to Comic Cons and, you know, to various conferences. And it was the very first time we were watching people react to something we made. And, you know, it was so amazing to see people's faces and just the look of awe and joy and excitement on their face made us feel like, you know, this is viable. Like we have to do this and keep going.
Yeah. And in fact, he's in the prologue episode. He's not in there. It's a different character. His character only comes in episode one, which takes place after the prologue, you know, in the chronological order of it.
So how long a gap was there between taking the trailer out to like the various Comic Cons to actually starting work on the series itself?
So the trailer was finished in early 2016, and we were on the road for a large part of that year, like also doing our video work as well. We started properly on No, sorry. It was 2015. End of
2016.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And then we started work on episode on the prologue midway through 2016. And that also took us, actually, it was, yeah, the prologue took us about 4 months. So from 6 months to 4 months. And that was one character, you know, and just one character voiceover. We did motion capture. We were testing out all sorts of stuff. And then we finished that, I think, Jan or Feb of 2017. And then somehow it got into Khan.
Not somehow. We sent it there. Yeah, okay. And they were like, yes, we'll take it.
I just pick up like a bootleg copy from somewhere.
So, I mean, you know, as a film, I was like, I'm a filmmaker. I'm going to Khan for the first time, and I'm going with a VR piece. So it was really like not how I had envisioned it, but obviously it was awesome regardless. So,
oh yeah, definitely. So the whole thing was animated. I can't remember now what, like when we spoke before, was it on using Unity or is it Unreal? It was Unreal, wasn't it?
We use Unreal. Yeah. We work on Unreal.
So how was that? How long did that take from like start to finish altogether?
Well, actually, you know, there's a couple of reasons why we use Unreal. First of all, our guys are really comfortable with it, which is quite rare in Asia. The Epic guys just kept releasing every release that they made, just improved, at least the I don't know if it was intentional, but the 360 and VR side of it just kept improving, significant improvements in terms of making it. So that one of the reasons why our turnaround time just kept getting shorter, like, you know, it's gone, like we're able to do, you know, the next episode 3 is something like running at something like 14 minutes, and that took us like 3 months to put together. So, you know, we're able to do quite a bit, and it is much, much more complex than all the previous episodes. So we're able to do a lot more. And, you know, we're in touch with the Epic guys. It's really great that they do send people out to Singapore, and we keep in touch with them. So it's really good. Like, we have no issues with Unreal at the moment.
Yeah. And just other things in the pipeline have become so much easier. Like when we did the prologue, we were doing motion capture using a Kinect. And then, you know, then a bit when we moved on to episode one, or actually, started using Perception Neuron, you know, and then partly kind of the traditional Vicon system. And then after that, now we're actually looking at motion capture using a Vive, you know, using the Vive trackers. So, you know, it's like this constant progression in the pipeline. And because we're a small team, we're able to do that. But it, you can also see it, though, in the work. So if you go, you know, when you start with Prologue and then compare it to like the episode we're going to be coming out with soon, there is a marked difference in the quality, which is something that, you know, as a small indie team, we're proud that we're progressing. And if we had the resources and budget, we'd love to go back and redo some of the old stuff. But, you know, that's kind of part of our narrative of like, it just gets better and easier as we go along.
Yeah. So between the prologue and episode one, there's a bit of a gap. Like it was at least a year or more because, you know, we were just testing out motion capture and how do we just improve on what we're putting out with like the limited resources that we have.
Sure.
So, yeah.
How was it working with the motion capture? Was that the first time you'd ever worked with that technology before?
Yeah. Motion capture, I don't know. Have you worked with it before?
No. So that's what I mean. I'm quite intrigued because it sounds exciting and really cool, but at the same time, it also seems quite difficult.
Yeah, because when you look at the product videos, they're just like, oh, you put on the suit and you plug it in and bingo, boom, bam, boom, and then you got the data and you put it in the character and hey, it's running. Nope, that's not how it works at all. I don't care what anybody says. Like we've tried so many of these solutions. It's just like I remember when we were doing episode one, and one of the scenes we had, so we got two suits, we got two actors, trying to get them to do it simultaneously. It just wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. The calibration process was, you know, extremely cumbersome, and it was to the point where I was just like, all right, you know what? We're just going to do this one by one, one actor at a time, and we will have to do, like, sync them up properly in post and stuff like that. It was just, it's painful work, man. I mean, it's not so simple.
Yeah, it's really painstaking. Yeah. But, you know, it was also an adventure for the actors. I mean, because we, you know, our actors are all TV or stage or screen. Mm-hmm. And, or, yeah, so for them it was also, you know, kind of something new. But I have to say the fact that we could do it at all is pretty amazing. Yeah. It's just that the heartache of the painstaking cleanup process of the data and all of that. And, you know, you realize you've missed some big movement that, you know, needs to go in because the character looks weird. Those types of things are hard lessons.
Yeah. And we did also try the traditional Vicon system, because, you know, in one of the episodes, there's a fight sequence, which I just couldn't trust to do that with the existing things that we had. So we actually went out and partnered with the local school who had one. Mm. And, you know, we worked with them to get the fight scene done. And even that was not straightforward. Like, I mean, the quality of the data that comes out is better, but the process is by no means. And as a director, like, if you can't, I mean, I can't see the quality of it right until it's actually up there. So it was very it's a big learning curve, and you know, I loved every second of it, but it was definitely painful as well. There's definitely a love-hate relationship with mocap.
And you know, I have to say, you watch like those Hollywood films and you see the credit list that go on for like 10 straight minutes of names and names and names. And I always used to sit there and be like, so what do all these people do? And now, having done what we've done, I suddenly, it all makes sense to me now.
Like, you know, in like when you watch making of Avatar or whatever, you see them with like that helmet thing and there's a camera looking at their face.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I was like, with the dots on their face. I was like, you know what? Why don't we try and do that? Why don't we get a GoPro, put it on their face, because there is software that will read that data. Mm-hmm. And we can work off of that. Everybody was like, that's a great idea. And the question was, well, where do we get the helmets from? I don't know if you've ever looked for those. I found one company that was selling them for like $3,000.
Oh, wow.
And then to the point where we were like, well, what if you put a bicycle helmet on and like...
Pick a stick to it.
Yeah, and see if that works. It was ludicrous levels of like things that we did to try and get that happening until it came to the point where we just said, you know what, we'll just animate a lot of this stuff. So we have a fantastic animators on board who are able to help us with that. But obviously it's not like, if you were to purely animate it, you would need like 100-person team or something, you know, whereas we have two. So awesome.
Yeah,
that's a lot of budget gone.
Yeah.
So what about the fight choreography then? Like, how did you hire people in to put that together? Or
yeah, that was actually pretty awesome, because I found there is a Wushu martial arts school here.
Okay.
And I went over to them and I was like, look, guys, they do a bit of stunt stuff for like local television. So somebody told me that, why don't you just have a chat with them? I went over there, had a chat. Again, trying to explain VR to people who have no idea is just pointless.
Yeah.
So I showed it to them. They were like, we still don't get it. But look, at the end of the day, you need people to put on a suit and do some stuff. Fine. We can work with that. They obviously weren't familiar with the mocap side. So we actually came up with so I worked with them saying, this is what happens. Here's the script. And we went through and they were like, oh, we can do this. We can do a backflip. We can do this. And then when we got to the space, the you know, the people who were running the system were just like, you can't do a backflip. That's not going to work. You can't fall on your, like, you can't fall like that. You'll smash the sensors. So we really had to like pull back, like on the fly, change a bunch of stuff, and just fingers crossed it'll work later on, kind of thing. But it was totally cool watching these people doing it. And you know, there's a scene where she runs up and kicks him in the back, mm-hmm. And they were like, nope, you can't do that. So she can kick a pad and you'll have to like fix it later in post. Yeah. And, you know, as a filmmaker, I hate hearing the words fix it later in post.
Yeah.
Because, you know, but in animation, you have no choice. It is what it is. So, yeah, we just worked with it. And, you know, that what you see is what you get at the end there.
Did you have any say in like some of the choreography of that fight? Or did you just like give them free rein to, you know, play around?
No. I came up with the basic, because there were some things like I had to envision it in 360, mm-hmm. right? I couldn't have them just do whatever the hell they want and we try and figure out the camera movements mm-hmm. later. That wouldn't work. So I figured out a basic flow that this is what's going to happen. The camera is going to be roughly around here. You know, we kind of mapped it out. And then within that scene, like I was like, so she runs up to him, they fight, and then he throws her or whatever. And so they were like, okay, fine. In the they fights thing, how about if she kicks him here, there, blah, blah, blah. So we kind of like mocked it out. We did a bunch of rough rehearsals and all that. And then we went for on the day of, and then we had like 2 days with the system, with the Vicon system. And we spent most of the 2 days on it as well, because we just did multiple takes yeah. and upon takes. And they were real troopers when they did it.
That sounds so awesome.
Yeah, because they weren't actors either, right? Yeah, so the yeah. guy who was playing Gora, he had no idea how Gora would walk in and stuff like that. And he was a big hulking dude. So, you know, we were like, this guy was quite skinny actually, but Gora, the character, is yeah. quite a big hulking being. So it was like we had to work with him to say like, no, you got to move like this. But again, he's not an actor. So I think you can see some of that in the final product. But I think overall, I was really happy with how it turned out.
Yeah, definitely. It looks great. Yeah. So yeah. with all of that, what would you guys say was the biggest challenge throughout the whole process?
What wasn't the challenge? That's a good one.
Yeah, it's hard to summarize and choose the biggest one.
You're both broken shells by the end of it.
Yeah, but we're both shells of people we once were.
Yeah, I'm gonna have her go first.
No, I mean, I think, you know, for me, I think the biggest challenge is, if we had tons and tons of money, I feel like a lot of this would be a lot easier, yeah. you know? So making it is really a process of finding people who believe in the project and they just want to do something different, and especially something different coming out of this region. And, you know, so for us, that's been the hardest part. Like, and also, you know, we're trying to hack together this process and make it something that is doable for a small studio. Like, I believe that really there is a way for smaller studios to make great content like this. And we're the ones trying to figure that stuff out. And hopefully in the future, it'll become a more common yeah. thing, you know?
I think that's, for me, that's the hardest challenge, was that we're one of the first who are doing yeah. something like this. And there's no rule book. Like, it's just like, is this even going to work? Like, when you're putting a scene together, it's like, does this, you know, we're so deep mm-hmm. into it that it is difficult to step back and be like, does this actually make sense in, like, will people actually understand, appreciate it? You know, like, I think that's, for me personally, like, one of the big things. We watch a lot of the other VR stuff that's mm-hmm. coming out, but I mean, I haven't seen like a hardcore animated CG like fight scene in VR or anything yeah. like that. So it's also like, it's great that we're pioneering like these kind of unique things, but is it going to work? Is it not going to work? You know, obviously I don't want to be the guy who's like, oh, that was great, but it could have been done better. I want to be the guy who's like, well, that was amazing, and people should try and make it like that.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we're working towards.
Well, you guys yeah. are certainly paving the way. That's for sure.
Thank you.
So what advice would you give to other creators out there that are looking to get into this crazy world of VR?
Be ready to solve problems.
Yeah, it really is like of course you have to be creative, but it does feel like every step of the way is problem solving. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thinking about there's two sides to the coin, right? The one side is that it is within any creator's grasp to do something if they want to. Like, the tools are there now. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't say that like 5 years ago. You know, so that is amazing. But you have to then be ready to also face all of the troubleshooting, because it's constant.
And I think the other thing is, if you're a filmmaker and you know your traditional craft like really well, mm-hmm. you have to be prepared to learn at least some parts of the tech side of it. Like, the approach can't be, well, this is what I'm envisioning and the tech guys will solve the other problems. Those are your problems as well. Right. Like, I know a couple of filmmakers, and that's the attitude towards it. And it shows in the work. Like, you got to think about, you got to be looking at transitions and the flow of this, the narrative and all that kind of stuff. But you also got to take the tech into account and be like, well, you can't be that close to the character, or it doesn't make sense in 360 and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you really got to respect the medium as well.
No, absolutely. So what's next for you guys?
Well, we are currently chugging along full on to finish season one by the end of the year. So that's our, we have to do that, basically. Yeah.
We also actually have another piece of a VR experience that we're about to release, which is related to ocean plastic. So, yeah, so that's a mini interactive game, I suppose you could call it. So we're going to release it on the Rift pretty soon. And what we've realized is that we've done a couple of VR pieces and an AR piece related to this issue. And it's a real pet issue of mine and Abby's, because we're both scuba divers, and we've had an experience where, you know, you're swimming in pristine waters, which suddenly turn into like a trash dump, you know, and, you know, we've had to surface in waters where the surface is just covered with plastic bottles and crap. So, you know, we wanted to create that experience for everyone to have. So that's our other project that's ongoing. And we're really hoping to, you know, prove that you can use AR and VR as mediums to create impact as well. So we've had a lot of people who've done our experiences, and they feel closer to the issue, and that they want to talk about it, and that they want to do something about it. And so, you know, so that's one of the things we're also exploring. So that's called Oceans We Make.
Yeah. So that's it. It's, we've submitted it to the store. Yeah. We're just waiting for a release date now. That the Oceans We Make piece was actually something that took us on a different tangent as well, because it showed us like how it really, VR can really impact and change people's attitudes. So, I mean, it's an award-winning piece, and it's been shown like at events, like the World Bank showed it at their headquarters for an event. Mm-hmm. Facebook actually licensed it from us for a bit for Taiwan, for their Oculus education launch. So, you know, we know that it's an effective piece, and now we're ready to like release it. I think we want as many people to try it as possible, and we want to do more work like this, because we know it has Phoenix is nice. It has, it's a much more deeper kind of experience, where it's more long-term, but this is like a sharp stab into that, into that issue.
Yeah, no, I definitely think it's great. 'Cause I had like a similar problem on a commercial shoot in Indonesia, and we was on a boat and we was trying to shoot a scene on this boat, but then you could just see like, you know, plastic bottles floating like past and stuff all the time, and it was just constant. There's always something, like some bit of rubbish in the water next to us. It was a nightmare. It was horrible. It's just horrible to see. That sounds great. So start wrapping up, but where can people find you both online?
So I'm on Twitter at Imagine Abhi, ABHI. You can get me on that. We're also
You can find the Phoenix on Facebook, the Phoenix VR, and then you can find our company Warrior9VR on Instagram at Warrior9VR, and we're also have a Warrior9VR Facebook account where we talk more generally about the work we're doing apart from Phoenix. And those are really the best ways to reach us. And then the Phoenix website, we actually do have a newsletter that we send out to people just to keep them updated on the project and where you can find it. And those are really the best ways to stay in touch with what we're doing.
Perfect. Yep. Sounds great. Well, I'll put all the links to those in the podcast notes so people can find them. And yeah, send me the link once everyone's on the Rift. Send me the link and then I'll add that so people can check that out as well.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, that would be great.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Awesome. Definitely. Well, thank you both so much for taking the time out of your day to do this. Yeah, really appreciate it.
No worries.
You're thank welcome. You.
Massive thanks to Abby and Ashima for coming along to chat. Make sure you give them a follow online to keep up to date with their latest projects. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to subscribe for more interviews as well as conversational episodes with myself and Alex. Also, I'd be super grateful if you could give us a nice review on iTunes, as it really helps. If there are any VR filmmakers you would like me to try and get on the podcast, or if you're one yourself and want to jump on an episode to talk about your work, feel free to reach out to me either on Instagram or Twitter at Daniel K. Hatton. That's HATTON. So yeah, thank you for listening to another episode. Really appreciate the support, and I shall see you. Technically I won't see you, but you know what I mean. I'll see you on the next one.